Back together, you and I, on Tuesday, March 15th, 2022, right here on Connecticut Today. I wondered aloud at the beginning of the program why almost every discussion about key issues in Connecticut, like crime, always pivots back to racism in some way. Connecticut Energy Marketers Association head Chris Herb talked about what the heating oil market is doing in light of the coming ban on importing Russian crude oil. This is one of those days that I read the media reports about something that went on, and I just kind of literally sit back in my studio chair or in my office cubicle chair that I was occupying before I came in here today, and I just say, shake my head, and I have to laugh. And you may recall that yesterday, or we told you about a big hearing coming up yesterday regarding a mainly Republican push. I think there might be some moderate Democrats on board with this, but a mainly Republican push now that car thefts are becoming a little bit more of a problem, which even law enforcement officials now are admitting, a Republican push to try and better deal with some of these violent youth repeat offenders. Again, we're not talking about, and I feel it necessary to say this every time I dive into this, because we're always getting new listeners, and I don't want people to make some sort of a broad brush judgment on me here. But we're not talking about taking kids who may do something dumb or throwing a brick through a window or causing some minor vandalism or, you know, stealing a candy bar. We're not talking about taking kids like that and making them live in a facility with hardened criminals. That's ridiculous. Nobody wants to do that. However, you have to have had your head buried in all manner of sand and rock over the past 2 or 3 years, to not know that even the governor's state police commissioner, public safety commissioner, Jim Rovella, even several well-known chiefs of police around the state have said publicly, we have got a problem with repeat offenders, particularly when it comes to car thefts, carjackings, you know, stealing cars, whatever. And part of that problem is a loophole, just one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And I had no idea this was even in the statutes of the state. But the level of theft you're charged with, it depends upon the value of the car. So it's more serious thievery if you steal a $50,000 Mercedes versus a $10,000, you know, used Toyota. As dumb as that sounds, that's what reformers have done in this state over the years. And there are people in this state, lawmakers mainly, and again, some law enforcement officials say, listen, we want to reform our criminal justice system, okay? But we don't want to go so far. We don't want the pendulum to swing so far to the left that we stick our heads in the sand here. So, you know, we've had a lot of legislators on this show who talk about, you know, a package of reforms to deal with kind of crossing the T's and dotting the I's a little better and to deal with some of the things that are happening in the youthful offenders, you know, the juveniles. And I've read the stories here, and I'm not the only one talking about this. They've been on News 8, News 12, all the other TV stations. They've been to the Hearst papers. They've been to the Current. They've been in all the newspapers about, you know, a lot of times offenders, youth offenders, juveniles, which is why you never hear their names. Some are older, but a lot of juveniles that police say they are encountering almost on a weekly basis. And because they are not dealt with tough enough or sternly enough on, they see this. Many of the police chiefs that have spoken out about this, the chief in Waterbury, I know the chief in New Britain, they have said, listen, this becomes a breeding ground for violent crime. But it seems, if I'm correct here, and I'll read you some of the comments from yesterday, it's sad because it seems that there are certain people in society in this state, certain members of the General Assembly, who only see this through race. They only see this through skin color. Now, I will freely admit that I am no expert. I don't know jack you know what about criminology, about rehabilitating people, about public safety and in the ways that we run a penal system, a judicial branch. I don't know anything about that. But what I do think I know is I think I can sniff out BS pretty well. I've been doing this for 30, 35 years, watching these same people in and out, in and out. And there are some people who will, how should I say this gently, who will disguise an agenda under the realm of caring. And sometimes it happens on both sides. It does. But we're seeing just some really interesting things come out of anything that has to do with taking a continued look at our criminal justice system and anything that is uncomfortable for some people, and we're not talking about every person, but is uncomfortable for some people, is almost immediately branded in racism. It's because white people in this state don't like black and brown people. What do I mean? Well, when we come back, I've got a couple of quotes from yesterday's hearing, and these are kind of interesting in as much as you even had the governor a couple of months ago saying we need to, in essence, saying we need to be a little tougher on some of these offenders. Yet, there are legislators, there are public service officials who seem to be dead set against, at least from what I'm reading, who seem to be dead set against doing anything even on an experimental basis, who seem to want to couch everything in race. The race card is always front and center. I'll tell you about that coming up. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And if you want to chime in on this or any moment of the show, feel free, will you? Come on, the water's fine. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. So I sit back and read what happened to this public hearing, which is not even a real hearing. I mean, it is, but it was done by Zoom or whatever, which is at this point ridiculous. And I see some of the things said yesterday, and the only thing I can gather is that when certain legislators, certain people don't have a critical eye on something, critical enough that it can be brought out in public to discuss something, to prove your point, all you do is you brand it in racism, because that's the cheap and easy way to do it. Now, what am I talking about? Well, of course, yesterday we had the hearings, and they were covered by all the online sites in the state. And this from Lisa Backus's story in the Connecticut News Junkie, protecting safety or perpetuating bias. Judiciary hears juvenile crime bills. Isn't it amazing that any time we point out criminality now, any time criminality is pointed out that may have a racial element to it, no matter if it's true or not, it's immediately branded as bias. Oh, you're just being biased. Well, can you let me explain what I want? But again, it is branded in bias because that's the easy way to do it, especially in an election year. Some opponents' descriptions of a package of Republican bills aimed at cracking down on car thefts and other juvenile crime were referred to Monday as dangerous, rooted in fear and bias, and a shameful political tactic. The Judiciary Committee hearing testimony Monday on elements of the Safer Connecticut plan from Senate Republicans and other bills from House Republicans, most of which focus on what they contend is a statewide crime wave. The proposals range from additional electronic monitoring for juveniles to allowing 13 and 14-year-olds to be automatically sent to adult court if they are charged with certain violent crimes. If they're charged A and if they're charged B with certain violent crimes. Not everything. Blasting the proposals, former state Supreme Court Justice Lou B. Harper, who chairs the state's Commission on Racial and Ethnic Disparity in the Criminal Justice System. He said, quote, advocating for punitive policies in response to a highly sensationalized narrative threatens to return the state to a tough-on-crime mentality that is rooted in fear and bias and disproportionately impacts black and brown members of our community. So again, you're already assessing this. Before there's been any real detailed discussion, it's already black and brown, black and brown. And I'm not sitting here saying that there isn't any racial aspect to this. But when the first thing you respond to, it uses race. I'm sorry, people go, oh, here we go again. And I don't care if you don't like that. It's the truth. He wrote, quote, advocating for punitive policies in response to a highly sensationalized narrative, as we mentioned, returns the state to a tough-on-crime mentality. Quoting again, the emotional nature of the rhetoric being used is not only dangerous because of the anger and fear it provokes, but also because it distracts attention away from finding and implementing evidence-based solutions to the motor vehicle theft problems. All right, Judge, retired Judge Harper. So what would be the evidence-based solutions to keep multi-time juvenile offenders from offending again? See, one side in this whole debate keeps saying what they're against. What are they for? What are they for? State child advocate Sarah Egan said in testimony to the committee, quote, the majority of children incarcerated in the adult correctional system in Connecticut are black boys, a foundational and crucial problem in our system that remains unsolved. Now, wait a minute, Ms. Egan, with all due respect, is that a fault of the system or is it a fault of something else? Is it a fault of something else? Why is the system always blamed? And I understand those systems are perfect and they need to be monitored and tweaked. But why? Again, I go back to the fact that we've been dealing largely with these criminal problems in major urban areas since, you know, the late 1960s, early 1970s, and yet nothing ever really changes. We've been trying this for between 50 and 60 years. What's the answer? Is the answer to immediately call something racist? You tell me. Chris Herb joins us, as he is wanting to do from time to time, from the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, his group watching, of course, what is going on with all of our energy prices over the past couple of weeks and how long that's going to end. Chris, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
Good to be with you.
Hey, Chris, I know we're kind of heading out. We're at the tail end of the heating season. We probably have a month, 6 weeks left maybe of heating weather. Folks may be using heating oil out there. What do the markets look like, Chris? And any ideas on what a person should do? Buy it now? Is it going to get more expensive? Hold off if they can, if they have enough left in their tanks. What are your thoughts on this?
Paul, this has been absolutely the most wild price fluctuations in history. We've never seen anything like this before. My members are telling me that we have not seen these types of ups and downs, not on 9/11, not during the Persian Gulf War, not during Hurricane Katrina. This is absolutely the most wild market ever. Our advice is that you work with your home energy provider. You know, call your local heating oil dealer, your propane dealer, and work with them. And that's where you're going to get the best guidance, because they're going to know how much fuel you have in your tank. They're going to be able to determine based on a heat curve, which is sort of a scientific formula that we look at to determine when deliveries are due. So we're not going to let anyone go cold. There's plenty of supply. But if you're working with your local family-owned company, you're going to be able to have the best idea on how to manage your way through this.
So, Chris, so you're obviously saying the short term is okay. When would the long term picture become a little fuzzy? I mean, let's say that we are putting this somewhat permanent stop on the Russian gas and oil imports, and it stays for a while. When should people start to look at what they should do for the fall again, or is that at all predictable at this point?
Well, you know, like I said, this has been a wild ride. A week ago Sunday, crude oil hit $140 a barrel. We haven't seen that since 2008. And today it's pressing 90. So we've seen a $50 adjustment in just over a week. In terms of what your listeners should do, again, is manage your buying with your heating oil dealer. A lot of people try to guess the market. And since this is a commodity traded on a worldwide market, you shouldn't be trying to guess. You should be trying to make sure that the price is something that can fit within your budget and that you're doing the things to reduce your usage. You know, conservation measures like don't turn your thermostat down to 45 during the day and then try to get the house back up to 10. Because you actually, people do this all the time. They use more fuel than what they save. You know, some really smart things. Open up the blinds, let the sun in during the day, let the house naturally warm. Close them at night to keep the cold air out. Make sure that your vents aren't blocked. So there are some really common sense things you can do. But in the off season, the number one thing you can do is have your system tuned up. You want it working at peak efficiency. That can reduce your usage by more than 5%. And imagine just being able to lower your bills in these price ranges by 5% could be a big savings these days.
All right, Chris, hang on. Chris Herb is with us. We'll do more with Chris after we check traffic and weather together. When we come back, I want to ask Chris about, you know, what are we learning from this as far as supply and demand? And like Chris says, we've had something like a $50 or $60 swing from, you know, 90-something dollars to $145, $150 in just a few days. What are we learning from this? More with Chris straight ahead. First, traffic and weather together, right in the button, 436 on WICC. A couple of more minutes with our buddy, our pal, Chris Herb from the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Check him out online, CTEMA.com. Chris, are we learning anything about this? Maybe your folks or people in the business? Because you kind of probably never thought, Chris, I'm guessing, that, I don't know, 4 to 5 to 6 to 7% of the supply of imported oil would disappear. It hasn't quite disappeared yet, but it's going to. Any oh wow moments in this for you so far?
I think that the world is learning that energy independence is immensely important, and it is a sad day for America when we have proactively made the decision that we did not want to produce the energy that we have here. And now you have the White House potentially negotiating with Iran on a nuclear deal so that we can get their oil when we have it right here. And you know what? Regardless of where you stand on environmental issues, I think that most of us can agree that it's better to rely on a barrel of oil from the United States than it is on a barrel of oil from Iran or Venezuela or Saudi Arabia.
And, you know,
it's a sad day.
No, I was going to say, Chris, and you know, you and I are probably around the same age, give or take a few years. You remember back in the 70s and 80s, there was always that chant, you know, no wars for oil. We shouldn't fight wars for oil. And, you know, oil should not be a factor of any war. Well, like you just said, if we are doing what we can to be energy independent, then I guess that chant by a certain part of the American political scene would be accurate, right?
Certainly. There is no reason for us to go begging countries around the world to be able to make up a deficiency in supply that we were just exporting this a couple of years ago, just over a year ago, actually. But federal energy's policy changed. We decided that we wanted to feel good about our energy. And what that has led to now is us literally begging to make up for about the 8 to 10% gap in oil that we received from Russia prior to this. We never needed to receive that oil. And now we're paying the price at the pump. We're paying the price to heat our homes.
Chris Herb from the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, CTEMA.com. Chris, thank you. We appreciate it. Take care. And we'll talk down the road, my friend. Thank you.
Anytime. Hopefully better news to come.
Yeah, hopefully, Chris. Thank you, Chris. Chris Herb there. All right, there you go. And he is right. And so many, and I'll tell you, folks, this is going to be a major campaign issue not only in 2024, but it'll be that way in the November midterms. You know, and there are going to be people on one side of the aisle or the other saying, well, you know, this shouldn't deter us from clean energy. And it shouldn't, because it doesn't have to. Because it, and the mistake, here's the thing. I think, frankly, and again, I'm no expert in the energy industry. I just try and be an expert in what a common person would think. I think if you look at the scenario, right, and you say, well, you know, we want to get away from fossil fuels. We'd like something that's more inexpensive, something that's cleaner, something that we don't have to worry about hurting the environment. That's fine. That's fine. But the mistake that a lot of the green energy crowd makes, and if I can figure this out, why can't anybody else? Honestly, the mistake that's being made here is that there is this concerted effort, this concerted narrative that we have to pull away from fossil fuels to force a conversion to renewables. Nothing's wrong with renewable energy. There's nothing wrong with that. Eventually, we will get there. But this is the exact kind of scenario that is going to be hammered by the Republicans. And whether you like it or not, it is a talkable. And it's relatable, not just to Republicans, but again, remember, there are a lot of centrist Democrats in oil states. And I know there's intricacies here. Mr. Biden the other day said, no, nothing I'm doing or nothing I did is affecting the oil industry. And the next day, the Wall Street Journal came out with a very detailed story and said, basically, the Journal editorial board said, basically, Mr. President, with all due respect, you're full of crap. And let's outline why. So there would be much more of a move toward clean energy, A, when it gets cheap enough to employ. And again, some houses have solar panels. That's wonderful. Some businesses have solar panels. That's just ducky. But again, forcing people into EVs, you know, and forcing pipeline closures and kowtowing to environmentalists and selling your votes there. I'm sorry. It doesn't make any sense. We can do both. We can multitask here, can't we? What's wrong with extracting every drop of oil we have and giving oil companies the incentive to do so? And then a few more years down the road, we say, hey, guess what? Wait a minute. We don't have to pump so much oil here. I know, you don't have to wave your finger at me. I know it's a complicated process. But again, why are we talking to Venezuela about getting oil? Why are we doing that? That's embarrassing. Don't you see how embarrassing it is? We call Maduro down there a thug until we need his oil. Oh, okay. Okay, we've chastised Putin over the years, but we buy his oil. We're now, and Chris is right, I'm reading stories. Well, they're telling Iran, would you come back to the table on the nuclear thing if we bought some of your oil? That, how embarrassing is that? I mean, come on. And apparently, remember when it was in the news a few days ago when Joe Biden was going to make a personal appeal to the Saudis for more oil into OPEC? That didn't go too far. They apparently took the call and said, sorry, Mr. President, no, goodbye. I mean, this is embarrassing. We're the United States of America buying oil. And I know what people are going to say. Well, you buy a little oil from everybody. It keeps everybody happy. You know what? Screw that. Our charity begins at home.